Chapter 40, Charlemagne's Works of Peace. Hence the life of Charlemagne was a series of wars, which he had to fight with the nations which dwelled around his extensive domain. Of this we told you in the previous chapter. Perhaps you may think, has Charlemagne done nothing else except waging wars? Who thinks that, however, is mistaken. He has not been merely a king who kept the many enemies in check with an iron fist. Oh no, he has brought his people over whom he ruled to a flourishing prosperity. His people? No, let me rather say his peoples. He not only reigned over the Franks, but also the Frisians, Saxons, and many other peoples, who, after they had been subdued by Charlemagne, belonged to his subjects. How difficult that was to reign over these various peoples. To that end, wisdom was necessary. Many languages were spoken in that gigantic empire of Charlemagne. Each nation had its own language. Each nation had its own customs, its own religion, its own laws, and so many more other things which had to be taken into consideration. And now, Charlemagne endeavored to unite all those different nations with their separate peculiarities, manners, and customs into one nation through the bond of the gospel. Although their speech was different, although their morals and way of life differed from each other, although the customs in each country were different, yet then they could still become one through Christianity. That would then be the bond which bound them together. Their religion had to become one. With Charlemagne, the church stood at the center. He did everything possible to further the prosperity of the church. No trouble was too great for him to reach that glorious object. Carefully he watched over the church of the Lord. He regulated and managed everything which was to be regulated and managed. Wisdom was necessary for that, but God had given him wisdom. Naturally, he had his faults, even great faults, but that does not alter the fact that like a father, he tried to take care of the church. And how about the Pope? Didn't he teach that he was the head of the church? Didn't he suppose that he was the viceroy of Christ's church here upon earth? Boniface, the great missionary about whom I told you a few chapters back, also acknowledged the Pope as the man who had everything to say in the church. Yes, certainly, that alas is true. Boniface went even so far that he persecuted all who would not acknowledge the Pope as the head of the church. But behold, Charlemagne did not do that. Oh, certainly Charlemagne did acknowledge the Pope. He was even a very good friend of him. We already told you that he assisted the Pope in his conflict against the Lombards. But Charlemagne would by no means submit to the Pope. He did not consider becoming a servant of the Pope. He was too independent for that. Charlemagne went his own way in ecclesiastical matters, and therein he did not trouble himself with the Pope at all. If a bishop had died in a place, then the Pope did not appoint a new bishop, but Charlemagne saw to it that the vacant place was filled again. He appointed the man whom he deemed capable for that. He did not ask if the Pope approved of that. Why, no, he had to approve of that. It happened just as Charlemagne desired it to be. Charlemagne also took care of the monasteries. These were under the supervision of the mighty king of the Franks. He visited the monasteries personally and strictly saw to it that everything went on as it should. The monks who did not behave themselves properly were reprimanded and punished by him. In addition, Charlemagne also took care of education. Almost all monasteries had a convent school. He often entered one of those convent schools. Then the mighty king sat in the hall or in the room where the instructions were given, surrounded by scholars. Then he asked various questions to inquire whether the instructions bore any fruit. Woe to the one who had not done his best. Such a one would receive a severe scolding from the king. You may be sure that the heart of many a pupil beat anxiously when the great king entered the school. Not only the pupils, but also the teachers were examined. Charlemagne had a wholehearted dislike for lazy pupils and lazy teachers. Many times Charlemagne was on the warpath, and then he could not concern himself with education. But when he was home, then he made those visits. At the same time, the king also regulated the income of the bishops. Naturally, they could not live without some income, for they had to eat and clothe themselves. Charlemagne said, "Very well, I shall take care of that." He stipulated that the people who attended church with them had to pay tithes. Thus the bishops obtained the right to levy tithes on the members of their congregation. Do you know what that meant? I shall tell you in simple words. All people had to pay a tenth of their income to their bishop. We would say to their minister. Now there were bishops of large places, but there were also bishops of very small places. Of course, it is self-evident that the bishops of the large cities earned much more than the bishops of the small villages. Those of the large cities would become wealthy, and those of the small villages would remain very poor. How great the difference would be between them! It would cause jealousy among the bishops, perhaps hatred and envy. Charlemagne said, "Oh no, that will not happen. I shall see to it that the one does not roll in wealth, while the other must live in poverty." He passed a law in which was stipulated the bishops of the large places may not keep everything for themselves. Then they receive too much for their livelihood. For that reason, the bishops of the larger cities must give up to the bishops of smaller towns a fourth part of the money which they receive. In addition, those who have a rich income must distribute a fourth of their earnings among the poor of their congregation. Then they must pay a fourth part of their income for the building of new churches and monasteries, or toward the maintenance of the existing churches. Finally, they may keep a fourth part for themselves. This was a very wise and sensible measure of Charlemagne. Indeed, as a father, the mighty king of the Franks has provided for the Church of God. Perhaps some will think, did the Pope approve of all those measures? Did he permit all that? Must not Charlemagne first ask his permission for all that? Whoever thinks that is mistaken. Charlemagne asked nothing. That which he considered needful and beneficial for the Church happened, and the Pope of Rome had to permit that, because time and again he needed Charlemagne. We know already that the Lombards had invaded his realm. And then it was Charlemagne who hastened to the south, to Italy, with his mighty army to come to the Pope's aid. Charlemagne drove the invaders back. For that reason, the Pope had to remain good friends with Charlemagne, because he was dependent upon him. For that reason, he did not say anything, but he quietly let Charlemagne go his way. But yet, I do not believe that the Pope was pleased with that. Charlemagne did not fear the Pope. Oh no, on the contrary, if the Pope did something that was not right, then he received a reprimand from Charlemagne, just as well as the naughty boy in a convent school who had not tried his best. When it was proper, then the king of the Franks dared to tell the truth to the Pope in a strong manner. In those days there already were many church buildings in which numerous images were hung, such as of Peter, Paul, Mary, the mother of the Lord, and also of others. But Charlemagne was opposed to that. He would by no means have that. He was an enemy of image worship in the church, and therefore it was strictly forbidden. They had to remove them, and he not only ordered it to be done, but he also saw to it that it was carried out. Neither did the Pope dare to resist this measure. In the year 800, Charlemagne visited the Pope in Rome. On the first Christmas day, he went to church. When he kneeled down to pray, unexpectedly the Pope pressed the emperor's crown upon his head. Thus, on that occasion, the king of the Franks was crowned emperor. Tell me, why did the Pope do that? Must he himself make that mighty prince still mightier? Ah, that was not his intention. To be sure, the Pope was also thankful that Charlemagne helped him every time, and he wanted to reward him for that. But the Pope also had another object with that. He also did that because he really wanted to stand above Charlemagne. He, the Pope of Rome, the viceroy of Christ here upon earth, as he supposed, should really be the mightiest, and for that reason he crowned Charlemagne as emperor. By this action he actually wanted to say, King Charlemagne, I, the superior, crown you as my inferior to be emperor. What conceitedness did that Pope have, isn't that so? Did Charlemagne realize and feel what the Pope intended with that crowning? Ah, he did not refuse the emperor's crown at that time. That would also be very difficult, because that would look like being ungrateful. That would make a bad impression upon his numerous subjects who applauded this action. Probably Charlemagne did not think it nice at all, but he could do nothing else at that time but accept the crown in that church. But when Charlemagne became old and ailing, he himself placed the emperor's crown upon the head of his son who succeeded him. Then he did not need the Pope. This act of Charlemagne tells us enough, does it not? Charlemagne was not only the powerful protector of Christianity, but he has also taken excellent care of the government of the country. I know very well that in this history we must especially consider the significance of Charlemagne for God's church. But yet, I also want to say something about the government itself, because that belongs to it and because thereby the church could be better protected. It is self-evident that he could not govern his mighty empire alone, because it was too extensive for that. Besides that, he was gone away so often to wage war. It was necessary that during his absence, the country would be governed just as well as when he was present. For that reason, he divided his empire into many provinces. At the head of each province stood a count, some kind of governor. That count had to rule his territory in the name of Charlemagne. He borrowed that territory from Charlemagne. Hence, the king was the feudal lord. The count was the vassal. The count was responsible for the right course of things in that province. When his subjects were at contention with each other, then he had to administer justice. He had to punish criminals. He had to see to it that the laws which had been issued by King Charlemagne were observed. He had to look after the public safety. He also had to protect the church in his territory. In times of war, he had to see to it that the soldiers in his province would report. In that way, each province furnished its own troops. All those small provincial armies formed together the large army wherewith Charlemagne went to war. That large army was the main army. Charlemagne demanded of his vassals that everything was in order. If that was not the case, then came the penalty, and that penalty was usually severe, because Charlemagne could be very severe towards the transgressors. And suppose there was a count who was not honest. When a vassal did not govern well, when he oppressed his subjects, how did the king find it out? Charlemagne had also taken care of that. Every year some men were sent out who traversed the entire empire. They traveled from city to city and from province to province. Those men were called missi dominici, meaning sent by the king or king's messengers. Hence they must examine all those counts. Just as King Darius divided his kingdom into 120 provinces over which ruled 120 princes, over whom Darius set 3 presidents, of whom Daniel was the first, thus did Charlemagne divide his kingdom in provinces over which counts ruled. And the missi, or king's messengers, we may also compare with the presidents. Wherever those missi came, they asked the people if there were any complaints about the counts. If so, then they were investigated, and if those complaints proved to be true, if the count was really guilty, then this was reported to the king. Then that count was immediately called to account. Such a dishonest count was usually dismissed, and his province was given to another count. At times, in very serious cases, it was followed by the death sentence. We realize that the counts had respect for that. Those king's messengers were always accompanied by a clergyman. He inspected the churches and monasteries. That entire system of government they called the feudal system. Moreover, Charlemagne also took care of agriculture. Various new crops, which were not yet known there, were introduced. The farmers received better farm implements to till the ground. Charlemagne was also greatly interested in cattle breeding. Wherever he could, he introduced improvements. He also took care of commerce. New roads were constructed. Canals were dug through which ships of the merchants could sail. Bridges were built. Dikes were cast up so that the country would be protected against flooding. By all these measures, trade was advanced. Where now the little city of Wyke by Dürstede is located, in the days of Charlemagne, the extensive city of Dorestadt was situated. Charlemagne took care of everything. He has brought his subjects to prosperity and civilization. How much work has been performed by that man! Charlemagne revealed himself to be a father for his people in every sphere. Only the criminals, the thieves, and murderers did not fare very well during his reign. They were severely and often cruelly punished. Formerly, a beautiful castle called Volkhof stood in Nijmegen. Charlemagne liked to live there very much. It is too bad that during the French domination, the Volkhof was torn down. Now only a small chapel, a little church, is standing there. Charlemagne always attended church there. There he listened to the preaching of the gospel. He also lived often in the German city of Aachen. In that way, Charlemagne had many more castles and citadels. At one time he would live here, then again for a few months he took up his abode at another castle. But he mostly lived at Volkhof in Nijmegen or in the city of Aachen. When the king was not on the warpath, then he still had plenty of work. During the day he received all kinds of people who came to ask him for advice. Often he set out to visit monasteries and convent schools or to perform other work. Yet at times he gave himself some relaxation. Then he went hunting. Many a wild boar or deer was brought along by him as hunting trophies, for he was a good hunter. But in the evening we could find him in the family circle. Then he had himself read to out of the Bible, or out of the works of the church father Augustine. At times he sat sociably talking with educated people who were always present at his castle. He learned much from them. But finally they all retired for the night. It happened at times that Charlemagne could not get to sleep. Then he arose, and in those long sleepless nights, he practiced the art of writing. Much more could be told about Charlemagne. What an active life did that man have! Yet with all that, he remained very plain, who always had a kind word for a simple farm laborer, or for an honest skipper who sailed past in his little ship. For that reason, it was no wonder that they called him by the honorable name of Charles the Great. He deserved that name. We notice in this chapter that Charlemagne has done other things besides waging war. The last years of his life, he was sickly. Then he could no longer undertake long journeys. Then he sometimes just sat still, staring ahead of him. He was not happy and cheerful. At times he sighed deeply, and then he sadly shook his head. Why? What troubled him? Ah, then Charlemagne was uneasy, for then he thought about the future. He felt in his body that he was getting old. If he was no longer here, then what? What would become of his mighty empire? Several of his sons had died, yet he still had one son who afterward would take his place in the government. But, at the thought of that, the unrest would come up again, because, although his son Louis was a good boy, yet he was not a sturdy boy. Would he be able to govern his realm with a strong hand? Charlemagne doubted that very much. And what would happen when it would be war again? Would Louis be able to hold the enemy with an iron fist? Charlemagne sighed deeply again. Again he shook his head, discouraged. Once he stood on the beach by the sea and saw some small ships sail in the distance. They were ships with dragon heads attached to their bows. He asked immediately, "Who are they, and from where do they come?" The ready answer was, "They are the Danes and the Normans. They are those dangerous pirates from the far north." Then again, fear crept into the heart of Charlemagne. Fear? Was he then afraid of those pirates? Why, no, not him, but would his son be able to keep those Danes and Norwegians at bay? Would his son be able to control those pirates? Charlemagne feared the worst. Oh no, as long as he reigned, those cruel pirates would not venture to invade his realm. And if they did risk it, then they would be repulsed with bloodshed. But what would happen after his death? Charlemagne did not know, but he feared. Certainly he himself still did what he could. Everywhere he had the coast guard reinforced. He gave instructions for the building of ships, warships. But before those plans and commands were carried out, death came for him. And then later, nothing came of it. That was a pity. On the 28th of January, in the year 814, he died at Aachen, and there he is also buried. When Charlemagne began to reign, Christianity was threatened from all sides. When Charlemagne died in 814, the enemies were conquered, and in his vast kingdom were many churches and monasteries. When he ascended the throne, it was still unsafe everywhere. When he laid down his head for good, rest and peace prevailed everywhere. The reign of Charlemagne has been a blessed reign in every respect. For that reason, they also called Charlemagne Charles the Great. It is true, I do know that not one human is really great. All men, whether rich or poor, are sinners before God. Only God is great. Charlemagne also had his faults and shortcomings. Just think once more of that sad instance with his first wife, the daughter of Desiderius, the king of the Lombards whom he sent away. Think of the massacre of the rebellious Saxons. Think of his great mistake to spread the gospel with the sword. But yet, God wanted to use Charlemagne. Charlemagne has been the means in God's hand to firmly plant God's church in those countries. He was a wheel in the great clockwork of God. It was also needful and necessary that Christianity had obtained sturdy roots, because